Hey friends, welcome back to the podcast. Today's episode is spicy, so I need to give you guys a warning. Please do not listen with little ears around. Pop in your AirPods or something. But today we had a conversation with Deborah Falada and Gary Thomas, who have a book coming out that they have co-written, and it is called Married Sex. So you can imagine what this conversation is going to go like and why you might not want to listen to it with your kids around. But let me tell you, this conversation was by far one of my favorites. What they are doing is kingdom work. The way that they are helping couples, the way that the Bible talks about sex. I mean, there's so many things. This conversation was incredible, and I would so encourage you to give it a listen, to hear what they have to say. It was so encouraging, and I know you guys are going to love it. So here is my conversation with Deborah and Gary. All right, Deborah and Gary, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
We're thrilled to be here.
Yeah. Okay. So just real quick, do the two of you kind of want to introduce yourself real fast? Just tell us who you are and what you do to give us sort of a base.
Sure. Well, Gary and I, I'll start with introducing myself. My name's Deborah Falada, and I'm a licensed professional counselor. And I've written a few books on relationships and mental and emotional health. And I've actually always been a big fan of Gary Thomas' books. So it's exciting that we were able to co-write this book together. But I'll throw it over to Gary to tell us a little bit about himself.
Yeah, well, I'm Gary Thomas. I've been a writer for most of my adult life, going on 3 decades now. Written a number of books on marriage, and sort of the same experience with Deborah. Really enjoyed some of her books that I've read. And when I was thinking about doing a book on sex in marriage, I just thought she would be a perfect fit because I knew she had a lot to say. Her experience as a licensed counselor, I'm more just the writer, pastor type. And I was just thrilled getting to know her a little bit more through the process.
Awesome. So yes, your newest book that you have co-written together is titled Married Sex. Like, we know what we're getting when we pick up that book, I think. So tell me, how did this project come about? And I guess, why this topic?
Yeah. I had a number of national marriage ministry leaders approach me just saying, Gary, we desperately need a new book for evangelicals to read that helps couples deal with the topic of sexual intimacy. They felt like the prior ones that were most popular were getting very dated. One or two of the most popular just had language that was so male-centric. More and more wives were saying, why would you even ask us to read this? And they just said, look, we really think you should be a person who would consider writing it. But I didn't want to write it alone as a man. I just thought it would be stronger. And so I had been so impressed with Deborah's writings. And I thought, working with a woman who's in a different stage of marriage, Deborah's in her 30s, I'm in my late 50s. She's got the gifts and training of a licensed counselor. I've just been more writing, talking on marriage for a while. We felt like we could put together a book that could speak to both sides of the marriage. We want a book where women feel heard and understood and represented, and also husbands feel heard and understood and represented. So that was sort of our aim in doing it together.
Yeah. So we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, that my audience and I have sort of already been having this conversation for quite a while, since that's been something that my husband and I have been open about our marriage was really struggling. And we started praying for our sex life, and we have a thriving marriage. And I credit it. The biggest thing, I'm like, well, it was our sex life that turned it around. But Deborah, I'm curious, you are a couples therapist. So I know you've worked with so many people who have either probably struggled in their marriage or their sex life. But when it comes to, I guess, trying to have a healthy and joyful marriage, what do you think comes first? Is it the healthy marriage or the healthy sex?
You know, I think they do work together in different ways, but I would say that a healthy sex life is really an overflow of a healthy relationship, because that's where it starts. And I don't think it's a coincidence that when you and your husband started coming together, having that emotional connection, having that spiritual connection and that intent to do something different for your marriage, that in turn, your sex life got better, because the two work hand in hand. And I think oftentimes we can get confused. I think sometimes our sex life isn't what we want it to be. And we can focus so much on our sex life, on our techniques, on positions, on all of these more superficial things. And all of those things are really important. But if we're not backtracking and taking a look at the health of our relationship first, I think our sex life is going to fall flat no matter what we do. So it sounds like you and your husband started at the right place.
Yeah. Okay. So I've had a lot of people be like, wow, you prayed for your sex life. That's weird. But I mean, we know it's not, you know, God cares about that. So what does the Bible have to say about this, I guess? Because you guys are talking about, you know, how the church handles this topic. So does God care about this?
I think it's fascinating, Caitlin, that when you look at the Bible, there really isn't one book that has one central focus. As important as prayer is, there isn't a book that focuses exclusively on prayer or one that focuses exclusively on how we handle our finances. But there is one book that has a central focus, and that's on the sexual relationship between a husband and wife. And that's a book called The Song of Song. Mm-hmm. And even the Hebrew title for it, it's sometimes called The Song of Solomon, but the Hebrew title is Song of Songs. And that comes from an ancient Near Eastern phrase where something of something really elevates, like God being the King of Kings means God isn't just the greatest king or the wisest king or the strongest king. He's different in kind. And so when the Bible chooses a title for the sexual relationship between a husband and wife, and it calls it the Song of Songs, saying there's no other song in human experience like this. There are powerful songs, there are beautiful songs, but this is really, in one sense, a song above all others. And when you see what it does, the spiritual analogies, the way it joins a husband and wife together and renews their affection, the way that it literally can create new life from two people, the pleasure it gives us, so we feel like we're humans made in a body with nerve endings, what it does to our brains for the relationship. It doesn't surprise me, knowing the science and neuroscience that we know today, that the Bible would give such high praise to this aspect of marriage.
Mm. So how does this, when we look at it with this perspective, how does this play into how we value our marriage overall?
I think a great sex life can make a good marriage great. It just adds that element of a special intimacy, an appropriate secrecy. You just look at each other. I can't believe we just did that, you know, when you're with others. But I think what Deborah said is true, that even a good marriage with a poor sex life doesn't usually stay good for very long. So sex is the perfect seasoning for a healthy relationship. It can take you to the next level. But if it's neglected, it starts to erode an already healthy relationship. So I think it's important to work on most for, I think for more couples than not, you need to have that healthy relationship first, and then sex becomes the seasoning. But to neglect the seasoning really does make marriage feel bland. And in the end, we usually get tired of bland relationships.
Right. Okay. So let me ask you this. I will tell you, some of the pushback that I got after people either read the book or had this conversation was, well, I have little kids. I'm touched by little kids all day long. I'm tired. I don't want to have sex. Why should I make that a priority if I don't want to? And like I said, I'm not a therapist. I don't have this answer. And my answer for my marriage was probably not the right one of, well, something had to change. And I thought that might be it. And I just did it. And once I just started saying yes, then it was fun. And then we really just started having great sex. And it was like, you know, that might not be the right answer for everyone, but that's a common pushback I hear from young moms or young wives who just, they just don't want to, I guess. How do we address that?
Yeah, I can definitely speak into that from two perspectives. A, I'm a mom. In fact, I just had my youngest, who is a 7-month-old little baby. I have 4 kids, and I do totally understand that feeling of being burnt out and exhausted, but I can also speak to it as a therapist. So let me just give you two perspectives here. First and foremost, I think when we get to a place where we're really feeling that depleted at the end of the day, where we feel like we've just given and given and given and given, and we have nothing left to give, I think the first thing we need to do is take a step back and ask ourselves, what am I doing to fill myself up? How can I fill my cup so that I'm not consistently and constantly feeling empty at the end of each and every day? I think that feeling alone of just emptiness, that I have nothing left to give, is a sign that I need to take better care of myself. So I kind of see that as a signal that I need to change something in how I'm doing life. I need to set more boundaries. I need to take more breaks. I need to ask my spouse to help me with certain things. I need to put more responsibility on the older kids, whatever that looks like. But the main question is, how can I, with the help of God, fill myself up and get myself to a healthier place? And then the second thing is, I think we have to look at sex not just as an act of giving, but as an act of receiving. I think so many times in Christian culture, we tend to have this unhealthy conversation about sex where we think that sex is just for the husband. Like, oh, you just need to give your husband sex. It's going to make him feel good. And if you don't give him sex, you're depriving him. And so we do it out of guilt and obligation, which is absolutely unhealthy. Now, I do think there's times that we each are going to not want to be intimate and we're going to sacrifice for each other. But I'm talking about the constant pattern in your life. It's important not just to see sex as an act of giving, but also to see it as an act of receiving. Like, this is for me. This is to fill me up. This is to help my neurochemicals make my body feel good. This is an act of allowing my husband to pour into me rather than just seeing it as an act of giving, giving, giving. So I think changing our perspective, number one, and helping us get filled up, but number two, and seeing this as an act of receiving as well, can really begin to change the pattern of how we interact sexually in our marriage.
From a guy's perspective, to help wives to bring this up with their husbands, I think if women could understand, I think the biggest turn on for a guy, if I could just use a phrase, is a wife who's interested in sexual intimacy. So if a wife were to say to her husband, I just really, and don't even say want, I just really need to have sex with you tonight. But this is what will help me get there. In the book, we talk about a couple where for her, mothering just removed her mind from having sex. And so her husband knew on Friday night, that was their planned night, that he brought home dinner so that she didn't have to worry about preparing dinner. He paid the babysitter. He put the kids to bed. She could go upstairs, take a bath and pamper herself. But if you present it to your husband as if I really need to have sex with you tonight, and here's what will help me get there, then it far from being a duty, and far from it sound like I need you to help more, why don't you help more, it's going to sound like, boy, I can't wait. And so I agree with everything Deborah said, and then just make your husband your ally with that language so that he'll step in and really help make it happen.
Yeah, that's so helpful. So kind of as a follow-up or tie into that, how do we also address, I feel like for a lot of us who grew up in the church, sex was either not talked about or it was completely drilled into our minds. Sex is bad. Don't have sex. Wait till marriage. But then it's like we get married and then no one talks about what happens after that. And your whole life you've heard, well, sex is bad. We don't do that. So then it's like this switch that you're supposed to make. And even coming in, sex in marriage feels almost shameful. So I think that kind of maybe ties in too to some of that, but I guess how do we look at that?
Yeah, it's true. I think I see that as a therapist very often where I've worked with couples and, you know, even just recently, couples who have been married for 1, 2, 3, even 4 years and haven't actually had sexual intercourse. And there's a lot of different psychological things that go with that. That's an extreme case, the 2, 3, 4 years. But I think it's important to understand that a lot of the obstacles that people are facing in their sex life really has to do with our underlying belief about sex. You know, our underlying expectations that we bring into marriage without realizing it. There's a whole chapter in the book called Sexpectations, and it's about the faulty ways of thinking, the beliefs that we've adapted along the way about what sex is supposed to be, how it's supposed to feel. Is it good? Is it not good? Is it, you know, covered with insecurity or shame, or is it about the man, or is it about, you know, I'm supposed to always be in the mood? Like, we have these expectations that aren't realistic. And then we try to meet those expectations instead of resetting and communicating and seeing sex as the gift that God meant it to be. So I also think one of the disservices that we do, like you said, Caitlin, is we talk so much about what not to do before marriage, but not enough about what we can do after marriage. And I think that's one of the most exciting parts about this project, this book, is that the focus here really shifts onto seeing sex as the good gift it is, and then giving you a lot of practical ways to enjoy that good gift.
Yeah, that's so helpful. So you talked about one of the chapters being about the sex expectations, but you also have a chapter that looks at some of the common sexual struggles that may be relational struggles. Would you want to share about that for a second?
Sure. Some of the things that I talk about in that chapter specifically are, a lot of times we have problems with our sex life. We've got, you know, maybe differences in sex drive, or a problem with something like erectile dysfunction, or vaginismus, like I mentioned earlier, or outside influences, stress, schedule, whatever. And I think a lot of times we have a tendency to start by dissecting our sex life. But I think, you know, some things to also have in the back of your mind. Like, if you're no longer touching on a regular basis, not just when you're having sex, but in day-to-day life, then maybe the sex problem is actually a relationship problem. If you find yourself struggling with bitterness and resentment, things that you haven't communicated, tension that's just constantly building up, then maybe the sex problem is actually a relationship problem. If you're unable to communicate and you feel like your arguments just go round and round in circles with no resolution, and maybe the problem you're having with sex is actually a problem that's starting in your relationship. So I think it's important to be able to kind of differentiate the two things and really kind of be aware that sometimes they do overlap. And I think one thing that Gary and I are really excited about in this book is that we kind of give you a roadmap to doing an assessment of your relational health, your emotional health, but we also help you do an assessment of just the plain old physical stuff, you know, the stuff that maybe not enough people are talking about, to kind of help you figure out, is it this or is it this or is a little bit of both?
Okay, I love that. We want to thank Faithful Counseling for sponsoring this episode. I have talked about it before, but I am a huge believer in therapy through all seasons of life. Even when things are mostly going okay, I just think it is a huge help and a total godsend. Faithful Counseling is a professional mental health service that allows users to connect with licensed therapists that share a Christian background. If you are seeking a mental health professional who is a practicing Christian, then Faithful Counseling may be a great option for you. With Faithful Counseling, you have the ability to connect with your counselor at any time. Counseling is not limited to individually scheduled sessions. You can also communicate with your counselor however is most comfortable and convenient for you, whether that be by phone, video call, or messaging. Faithful Counseling is drastically more affordable than traditional face-to-face therapy, and you have the assurance that your counselor will be a good fit, and you're always welcome to switch to a different counselor at any time. Faithful Counseling is not a crisis line, and it is not self-help. It is a professional counseling done securely online. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you don't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. You can visit faithfulcounseling.com/boldlypursuing and join the over 500,000 people who are taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. For being a Boldly Pursuing listener, you get the special offer of getting 10% off of your first month. Again, just go to faithfulcounseling.com/boldlypursuing. And once again, we want to say thank you to Faithful Counseling for sponsoring this episode. So, talking about a healthy sex life, what do you consider to be the hallmark of that?
I would say mutual enjoyment, where you're growing in your understanding of each other, your desire to please each other, your vulnerability to receive pleasure from each other. So I think heightened vulnerability, heightened honesty, more empathy. I just think of what sex calls us to bear ourselves in the most vulnerable of ways, to speak things to each other we would never say to someone else we never thought we would. And I think the more you can make yourself vulnerable and giving and receiving, it just does wonders for your relationship all around once you get out of the bedroom.
Mm-hmm. So how important is communication around our sex lives?
It's really a priority, but one of the hardest things. I think I talk about in the book how it probably took my husband and I a good 5 years before we got really comfortable with the conversations. You know, the people that I'm working with as a counselor, like there's certain words that people just aren't comfortable saying. Mm-hmm. And so it's not easy to have conversations. But that's what people have to understand, that I think it's a very normal response, that it's not easy. It's something that really requires practice. It's just like anything we do. You know, when you go to the gym and you start working out in the very beginning, it's not easy. It's difficult, you know? And I think when it comes to communicating about sex for some couples, especially the ones who come from more conservative backgrounds where sex wasn't really discussed much or was discussed in a negative way, or they feel like it's wrong to talk about it out loud, there's a learning curve there. Something that we're really excited about is we created a couple's guide to talking about sex. That's part of the pre-order bonus package, which, you know, if you buy the book before October 5th, you get this conversational guide. And one thing I'll tell you from the conversational guide is it starts with a lot of affirmation. Like it's really important not to just go into the conversation talking about the things you don't like or want to change. And I think some couples start to talk about sex after something goes wrong. Like maybe they had a bad experience or something didn't feel right. And so then they start talking about it, but it's with a negative tone. So I think the key to a healthy conversation about sex is starting with affirmation and starting long before an issue comes up so that you can begin getting comfortable with explaining to your spouse what you need and what you want in a positive way.
Another thing, Caitlin, that I think is crucial for couples to understand, especially younger ones, the more you do it, the easier it gets. I'm speaking about communication. You could take that both ways, but I'm intending to speak about communication, that at first it's more awkward. It's funny. A good friend of mine has been a podcaster focusing on sexual intimacy. And he talks about how 10 years ago when he started, how much more difficult it was for him to say the words that now just fly out of his mouth without him even thinking about it. And I found that too, just in writing this book and just getting familiar with reading about it and writing it, and then had to read the audio portion. I think you just have to get over that initial hurdle. And so I would just point couples back to the Bible. If you can't read the Song of Songs together, listen to it. Let God's word say, look, if God can speak this way, we can speak this way. And then take the next step. Well, let's read it to each other and then start to talk about it and use your words. Communication is just, it's such a beautiful thing in marriage. And I think sexual communication takes it to an entirely different level. It might be uncomfortable at first, but it won't stay uncomfortable if you dare to go there.
Yeah, I'm glad you added that, Gary, because I was going to throw that in there, that I remember the first conversations that we had about our sex life after being married for a few years. It was the most awkward conversation, which was so weird because it was my husband. But those aren't fun conversations to have at first, but it does get easier. And I would also encourage people with that. So I'm glad you added that in there. But I'm also curious, in talking about the church and those of us who kind of grew up in the church hearing these things, how can we do better? Right. I guess even just us as Christians, how can we have these conversations so maybe there is less of this shame or, I guess, awkwardness for people walking through this?
You know, we have so focused on telling singles, no, no, no. We need an equally strong, I think actually a stronger statement to marrieds, say yes, yes, yes. And again, I think we go to the Song of Songs. We talk about the mutual enjoyment. Then the messages I keep hearing is women that felt like they were here to service their husbands, which is not very pleasing for the husband or the wife, to be honest. And it's not a long-term strategy. Nobody can sustain a lifelong sexual relationship on that. So I think you go to Song of Songs 1:2, where the bride 3,000 years ago says, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is more delightful than wine. And that doesn't sound so big today, but back then, 3,000 years ago, a woman had no greater pleasure than wine. They didn't have dark chocolate. I can't even imagine my wife's life without dark chocolate. They didn't have Netflix in the evening. They didn't sleep on a bed. There was no coffee or caramel macchiato in the morning. I mean, they had none of that. Wine was really the one pleasure a woman 3,000 years ago living in a desert could look forward to. And so she's literally saying, and that word love in Hebrew is dod. It's not romantic love. It's physical acts of caressing. She's saying, when my husband is literally kissing me and caressing me and making love to me, there's no higher pleasure I have in life. I've never heard that stated from a pope, I don't think. And so I think we sell married sex, the joys of it, the purpose of it, what it does for our brains. We haven't gotten into that, what it does for our souls. And I think what it does for our worship, when you talked to Deborah earlier about how we get over this for women that feel like it doesn't seem like it's right. When a woman realizes that, well, the male sexual organ has a couple of different functions, the female sexual organ has one, and that's for pleasure during sexual intercourse. So God designed a woman's body for sex, to receive it, not just to be used by her husband, but for her own right. Women's orgasms on average can last twice as long as a man's and usually can happen more often than a man. So God designed a woman to have a heightened experience even over the husband. And when you realize that that's what you want to achieve, I tell this to wives as a pastor. If it's been difficult for you to get there, to experience it to completion, it's not naughty or sinful or selfish or lustful to want to experience that. All you want to be is the woman God created you to be. And that's just as holy as wanting to be a mom, wanting to have the gift of hospitality, the gift of leadership or teaching, anything else God created you to do. He created you to enjoy sex with your husband. And so working to achieve that is a holy and sacred goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really good, Gary. I also want to add to that. If you're out there and you're listening and you're like, well, that sounds great, but sex isn't that great for me. You know, I think the key is to realize that here's where I am today, but here's where I want to be. And what does that look like to take those next steps? I think so many times we kind of settle for the status quo or think, well, this is just as good as it gets. Or maybe sex just gets worse with time. Or maybe now that I don't have a high sex drive anymore, you know, sex isn't that important in our marriage. I think we really need to challenge some of those underlying thoughts and really believe. If we really believe that sex is good, what's the next step for me? Maybe you're stuck in struggling with some hormones that have dampened your sex drive. You know, maybe you have some depression or anxiety. Maybe you're taking certain medication that's dampening your sex drive. Again, maybe there's a relationship issue that needs to be addressed. I think the important thing is to ask yourself, what's next? What does it look like for me? I want to get to that place and come up with what that next step will look like for you. For some people, it's going to involve a visit to a medical doctor. For others, it's going to involve more communication with their spouse, a conversation that starts tonight. For others, it's going to maybe require the help of a professional counselor. But I think the key is identifying where we're at and where we want to be and then taking that next step.
The great news, Caitlin, is that I found in my research working with sexual therapists and then Dr. David Schnars, who is really one of the preeminent ones in this field until he died rather recently, is that your sexual prime actually could be about in your 40s and 50s, because the relationship of sexuality, it requires us to grow emotionally, relationally, I believe spiritually. That can take a couple decades. And so for the women listening, your highest sexual enjoyment very well could be ahead of you. And to understand that you have to work to get there, there's some things you have to learn about your husband and yourself and everything that Deborah said, and create a certain quality of relationship that can sustain that. But yeah, it is like anything in life. It is something that we can build, but it is a physical skill, like learning to play tennis or do yoga. I mean, it can get better if you're intentional about it.
Yeah. So I would love to hear from both of you. What are your hopes for couples who read this book?
You know, I think my hope specifically is that people will really start having some practical next step, like things I can start doing today to make this area of my life a little bit better. Three of my favorite chapters in this book are what gets her going, what gets him going, what gets you going. And I would say out of those three, my personal favorite is the what gets you going chapter, because I think so many times we put the responsibility of having a better sex life on our spouse. when really we should start looking in at what does it look like for me to begin doing things differently? What does it look like for me to begin taking ownership of this area of my life? What does it look like for me to begin enjoying this gift that God has given? And how can I start to make some changes in my life that will ultimately ripple into the changes that I make and affect my marriage? So I'm hoping that women especially can walk away reading this book feeling more empowered, feeling more excited, feeling like sex is for them, and having some practical ways to receive and practical ways to give, practical things that they can do to start making this area of their life even better.
I, Caitlin, would really like to see couples just continue to grow in mutual enjoyment. Again, I think for wives, pursuing that is the best way to bring sexual health to your marriage. I think for a healthy guy, he gets more pleasure in his wife's pleasure than even in his. And it helps deal with some of the whole issues about frequency. I loved that chapter that Deborah mentioned, What Gets You Going. That was her idea. I never thought about that, where we have to take responsibility for our own pleasure to some regard. A couple other ones that I was excited about were the one on the five senses of sex, how you can literally use all five senses that God created and that God designed to enhance the sexual experience in the bedroom. That when you think about, how does hearing affect the way I experience sexual pleasure? Or how do I bring in sight or smell or taste or touch? And it's just some things that I didn't know about. I didn't realize, Caitlin, that a woman's skin can be up to 10 times more sensitive than a man's. Just as a husband, that was a very valuable tool for me, thinking of going forward. There's a chapter called En Gedi Sex, where En Gedi is an oasis in the desert. And it just speaks of how sex can help us heal from the past. It's the oasis from the past. It's an oasis in the present. We might be going through a difficult time, but sex is like that oasis where we just get refreshed. And then also to face future fears. It doesn't make the difficulty go away. But boy, if you can walk through the desert from oasis to oasis, it's a much different journey. And then another one that Deborah and I stumbled on that I really liked was called Choose Your Adventure. And it was thinking more proactively about sexual positions, how some speak of real intimacy, soul to soul, see through me intimacy. Some is more about laughter and fun. Some is about raw passion. All of those things. But often we found couples rarely talked about it, what it meant to them, why some women like certain positions more than others, why some women didn't like other positions. And when couples don't talk about this, they can have two entirely different experiences from the same sexual episode. So we just want to get couples aware and talking so they can use what God has given them, each other's bodies and brains, to please each other, to enjoy each other, and feel so much closer as a couple and secure their children's home accordingly.
Wow. I cannot wait for people to get their hands on this book. Okay. Lastly, would the both of you tell us where can people find you online and where can they go get a copy of Married Sex?
You can find me on Instagram at Deborah Thaleda. And the best place to find Married Sex is anywhere books are sold, or at our website, marriedsex.us.
Yeah, the easiest way to connect with me, Caitlin, on my website, GaryThomas.com. It's where I have two blogs and all the links to social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And also, we would encourage people to consider the Married Sex Conference, which is marriedsexconference.com. That's a great way to over 25 speakers that are just basically great material trying to help couples to grow in this area from so many different wonderful teachers.
Well, perfect. I just want to thank both of you for having this conversation. I know this is kingdom work. I mean, what you guys are doing and putting out there, that's huge. So I just want to thank you for that. And thank you for this awesome conversation today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.